Welcome to the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Hey, welcome to the 31st episode of the Golf Podcast. Last week we talked about training with alignment sticks. We want to get into a little bit more of that at some point, but I want to leave some extra time in this episode because we've got a lot of great stuff to cover. This week we have Jay Ewing on the show. Jay is actually the CEO of the Bird Golf Academy. Jay is also an accomplished player. He played on the Australian and Asian Tour back in the 1980s. And he's the winner of the World Pro-Am at Pebble Beach in 1998. Jay also served on the Colorado Section PGA Board of Advisors, and he's the author of two books. Currently, he's working with over 20 professionals, and he's one of the country's most sought-after teachers. So Jay's got a lot of great experience, a lot of things to talk about. I'm excited to have him on the show. And most importantly, recently, he published an article on Golficity entitled Golf by Google's Numbers. So I'm going to include a link to that. I'm going to include Jay's contact info, everything like that in the show notes, because I think this is one of those things, if you haven't had a chance to read it on Golficity yet, I encourage it. It's very interesting. He talks a little bit more in depth about the recent downturn in the popularity of the sport, but he really qualifies it and he gets into some really interesting stuff. So I want to talk to him about that. Mike, how's everything going with you?
Everything's pretty good, Frank. You know, I'm surprised. How come you never talk about my World Pro-Am win at Pebble Beach? I'm just kidding.
You know, I just didn't want to inflate your ego, but we can talk about it.
How cool would that be to win a tournament like that?
I just like to play Pebble Beach.
I know, exactly. Yeah. I enjoy playing it on a video game, you know, but I'm excited to have Jay on the show. His article was great. I encourage you all to read it. It's really intriguing, and, you know, I'm really excited to have him on.
So interesting. So interesting about how he talks about even just the popularity of the sport broken down by countries and how the U.S. has kind of fallen behind. So, you know what? Without any delay, let's bring Jay right in on the show. So we have Jay Ewing on the show. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Frank. It's great to be here with you and Mike.
We appreciate having you. And you mind, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I'm the CEO and founder of the Bird Golf Academy, and we're really unique in the golf instruction business or passion or pursuit, as you would call it, because we only teach folks one or two on one. So we only do private golf schools for 3, 4, and 5 days. And really the most significant thing about our school, it's not just our format, but it's the who teaches for us and with us, because most golf schools are kind of headed up by one famous person and then someone works with one of their assistants being taught a method or a system. And meaning no disrespect to anybody, but philosophically we disagree with all of that, because a really skilled teacher is somebody that understands a great many methods and styles, and they put the right one with the right person. So all of our teachers have been PGA or LPGA professionals for a minimum of 25 years. And they include a National Teacher of the Year, PGA Master Professionals, 2 different U.S. Open champions, 6 members of multiple Halls of Fame, and so on. So the quality of the instruction that our students receive is second to none.
And it's very interesting that you bring that up, because what we're going to talk about today, and the reason we have you on the show, is we want to discuss your recent article on Golficity, where you had mentioned basically using Google to find out the different trends and noticing the downturn in the popularity of the sport in general. And one theory that I've actually heard recently a couple of people expressing is the idea that part of the problem and why some people are becoming dissuaded with the game and some people are not having as much, you know, getting as much enjoyment out of it, is because of the fact that they're being taught, as you said, these different types of methods that might not work for them. And one thing that I think is going to be really encouraging for the type of teaching you do is something like what we saw recently with Bubba Watson winning the Masters. I mean, here's a guy who's perfect proof that you don't have to have the, you know, cookie cutter method in order to really excel at the game. I mean, is that something that you found?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, if you look at all the greatest players in history, Frank, they've all had idiosyncrasies in different parts of their golf swings that they do differently. But the trick is that they know how to react to it, they know what works for them, and then they repeat it. And, you know, there's some classic cases like Jack Nicklaus. I would give you an example. You know, he was really the first player in the 60s that played a fade. Most every player at that time played a draw or a hook. That was the common way to shape your shot as far as all the touring professionals. And when Nicklaus first came out on tour, all these older tour pros said, oh, man, he'll never be any good playing a fade. You know, you can do it. So he actually then – he'd worked all his life up until then with Jack Grout, a famous teaching professional in Ohio. And so he went to see somebody else who taught him how to hook it. Well, that was the only year he didn't win a tournament in his whole competitive playing career. And so at the end of the year, Nicklaus was a pretty clever guy, still is. He said to himself, well, geez, you know, this isn't working. So I'm hitting a great hook, but I can't win. And so he went back to Jack Grout and was sort of with his tail between his legs. And Jack Grout watched him warm up on the driving range. And Jack Grout was a man of very few words. But he watched him hit some wedges. And then he said, all right, Jack, Nicklaus, that is, he said, hit me a high fade. And so sure enough, up went the right elbow, which was not customary because that produced the fade. And the right elbow went sort of outwards at the top of his backswing, which is what he'd been working on correcting to draw the ball, to tuck it in. And he starts hitting these big, pure fades, 290 yards. And Jack Grout, after 10 shots, walked off the driving range, and that was the end of that. And Nicklaus was smart enough never to watch and never to go to see another teaching pro the rest of his career. And here he is 18 majors later and still the greatest player in history. So that's a lesson for all of us.
It certainly is. And I mean, you take a guy like Bubba, who's never had a lesson whatsoever. I mean, it's the opposite end of the spectrum, but I think you can still see echoes of that idea today with people like Butch Harmon, who, when he gets a hold of these guys, he doesn't try to dramatically change their swing. He works with what they have. And that's why I think, you know, part of the reason why Tiger did well with him, while we see some of these other guys are dramatically picking up their game, Ricky Fowler, some of the other guys who are working with him now. So there's a lot to be said for that. But let's dive into this a little bit, because I found a couple things about the article that you wrote for Golficity so compelling. And if anyone hasn't read that yet, I'll put it in the show notes, a link to that. And I definitely encourage you to check that out, because it is so interesting the way Jay uses Google, you know, specifically being able to mine that data and kind of prove what we've heard so many times from people like the National Golf Foundation, saying that there's been a downturn in popularity. But Jay, can you tell us a little bit more about what you found?
Absolutely. Well, Google's a great device, and it's, you know, data collecting. It's very transparent to be able to research things. And I think that those of us in the golf industry have known for a few years that we have a problem getting new golfers to come and enjoy the game. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, if you watch the Masters, for instance, this year, as great as that was when Bubba won and it was an exciting tournament, the ratings were way down because one player didn't play. And that one player has been sort of carrying the golf industry, like him or not like him, for almost 20 years. And when Tiger Woods doesn't show up, it impacts an event significantly. And even though the Masters likes to think of itself as this very much standalone golf tournament, and they don't need Tiger or anybody for them to be successful, I think those facts sort of proved out at this year's Masters, because you have a very compelling winner. Tiger, Bubba was, you know, he's great fun to watch. He does amazingly goofy stuff. I mean, that shot he hit on the 15th hole this year, that was crazy. Right. I mean, you've got a tree shot lead in the Masters, and you thread it through the trees over water onto a par five. It's like, what are you thinking, you know? But that's Bubba. So, you know, but he was ready because he had his hovercraft ready to sort of skim over the water if he hits it in the water. But.
Right. And it makes me almost think that there's no real shortage, seemingly, of personalities on tour. I mean, we have, as I said, Bubba, the hovercraft, as you mentioned, and he has his own web series that just came out that follows him around his life, and he drives around in the General Lee, and he's got plenty of stuff for people to write about. And you even had mentioned in your article about little spikes that we see, like Duffner, when Duffnering came out, and all the guys were kind of doing that. But as you're saying, none of it is enough to really make that influence. And even these little blips that you so, you know, adeptly put into the article in embedding the Google data, none of them go anywhere near what you're calling that Tiger Woods spike when he returned in, you know, back in 2009 after he was out and injured for a while. And now we see the same type of thing. He's out and he's going to be returning hopefully later this season. But that was an amazing increase. I mean, it's well over 100% increase in internet search just in that time period. So why do you think that is? What is the draw so much for specifically for Tiger?
Well, I think, Frank, he's become a very polarizing guy. And I think that fans are either at either end of the spectrum with him. They really like him and they really don't like him. And people will watch something because there's a good guy and there's a villain. And I think he's both. And he's become both. But, you know, any sport needs the compelling athletes to really attract it, like Michael Jordan was in basketball, or Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. I mean, all sports need somebody compelling to make somebody be interested in following it. And golf had that with Tiger. And maybe it still does. But at the same time, somebody will come along. I believe this. And they'll supplant that. But the media tries to make that person happen, and that person will happen. Like, I think a lot of people would love Rory McIlroy, who I'm a big fan of. I think this kid is marvelous. I think he's astonishing. He's 24 years old. He's won two major championships. But all of a sudden, we expect him to do things that Tiger did, which is win a major or two every year. Mm. And that's just so hard to do. You know, I mean, Mickelson's a very galvanizing figure. But as great of a player as he is, he's 44 years old. He's won five majors. So we had with Tiger for that 10-year period where he won these 14 majors is so extraordinary. You can't manufacture it. You could wish for it to happen, but it may or may not happen again. I think golf is fine if it doesn't. You know, I've been a golf professional for 35 years. This has been my whole life. I love this game. I think as a game, we're going to be fine. I would say as a game, though, we need to maybe look at doing some things a little bit differently.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things that I've seen pop up that I wanted to ask you about. But before I get into that, one thing that I wanted to ask you, because a nice, interesting other caveat to the article you put together was showing how a lot of this really pertains specifically to popularity being down in the United States. You show things like Ireland, United Kingdom, South Africa, Canada, all those, you know, regions being above the U.S. as far as when we talk about internet searches go. Do you think that has to do with the U.S.'s, you know, the way this country we consume media? Is it that we're more directly tied to everything you're speaking about of wanting to have that story and that obsession with Tiger, so to speak? Is that why we are more dramatically affected than some of the other countries?
Well, I think that, you know, if you look at the way we've become sort of as a society, we're such an instant society. We have to have something now. And golf requires a lot of patience to play, as you both know. It's a game that requires a part of your time. It's not an instant, quick thing. Learning the game is a lifetime experience. Harvey Penn, who wrote the greatest golf book I think that ever was, The Little Red Book. If you're ever going to read an instructional book, that would be the only one I'd ever recommend. And, you know, Mr. Pennock was an overnight success when he was 92. His students, Ben Crenshaw and Tom Kite, encouraged him to write The Little Red Book, which went on to become the biggest selling golf book in history. And Mr. Pennock, who I think a lot of us would think was the greatest teacher that ever lived, but he said towards the end of his life, he said, you know, I've probably only learned 70% of what I should have learned about this game. So if the greatest teacher that ever lived only knew 70% of the game, then a lot of us have a lot more to learn, you know. So it's sort of all relevant. But, you know, we are as a society today so quick, so instant, so I've got to have it now. And golf demands that you take a deep breath and enjoy yourself and go out there and smell the roses a little bit.
And that's so interesting to me, because when we talked about something like these small spikes, so to speak, that you saw in the data where golf, you know, picked up a little bit in popularity, there were things like the duffnering, as we said, just as an example. And a lot of that goes around the way media in general is structured right now, where everyone's looking for that next quick viral event, that like viral thing that hits and it's big briefly and then it goes away. But in reality, what you're saying, for having the real growth staying power, we need to move away from that idea of just who, you know, which golfer, you know, tweeted something out and then we need to all find out about it and it's gone. And the you know, they say the lifetime of a tweet is 15 seconds or something like that. Really, it needs to be grown in some other manner than that, is what you're saying, correct?
Yeah, I think so. And it's, you know, while maybe we have to react to what a market is, whether it's golf or anything, I think you have to remember why you play golf. And, you know, golf should be an escape for people. It should be a magical 4 hours that you spend not worrying about your work, not looking at your cell phone. I mean, when we have students come to our school and they have their cell phones on, we ask them very politely but firmly to please to leave that behind. We want them to really enjoy this, to really benefit from what we're going to do with them. But excuse me, that should be a lesson for everybody playing any round that they ever play. Leave all that stuff away. This is what golf gives you. It gives you an escape. Mm-hmm. It gives you a four-hour experience, whether you're playing by yourself with strangers or whether you're playing with 1, 2, 3 or your best friends in the world. But that's what golf's all about, and that's what it offers you. And I think if you introduce all this stuff to a golf course, not to sound like a fuddy-duddy, but I think you've lost the very essence of the game.
And that's interesting. Now, I want to get your take on this, because I think it kind of plays into what you're speaking of. Recently, we've heard a lot about the Hack Golf Initiative, TaylorMade, and a couple others have partnered to try to do this, because they've recognized, rightfully, according to your information, your data here, they've recognized the downturn in the popularity of the sport. But I think that their approach, based on what you're saying, is something that is missing the mark. I mean, things like these 15-inch cups that they're doing in order to make the game, as they say, a little bit easier. To me, that really just sounds like, again, playing into that idea of instant gratification. I mean, is it that true that people are, you know, less interested in the game because they're not getting that instant gratification of playing well quickly? I mean, as you said, you can spend your whole lifetime learning this game and improving. And to me and Mike, and we talk about this on the show a lot, that's where the enjoyment resides, is constantly improving. You know, it's that journey, not the destination, so to speak. So what is your take on that? What's come out in the news with Hack Golf and some of these other ideas to rapidly grow some interest?
Yeah, I'm perhaps too much of a traditionalist, Frank, to really buy into all that stuff, because I'm with you there. I think that, you know, golf is one of the beauties of this game is that you can always get better. One of the beauties is that you will never own it. You'll never conquer this game. That it's a continual learning process. There are so many correlations between golf and life. Life is the same way. We may master something, but we don't master life. And you can always learn, and you're always growing as a person. And I think those correlations are very similar to this game. And it's like, for instance, people want to change rules so that you don't have to hit out of a divot. Well, I just think stuff like that's crazy, because, and you could call me a bit of a fuddy-duddy, but that's how the game's been played since day one. We're the only sport in the world that we monitor ourselves. We're our own rules makers. We, you know, in pretty much every other sport, it's like, wow, you got away with something? That's really clever. Well, in golf, that's against the rules. Not only is it not clever, it's just not how you play the game. And I think that those things are special. And I think that when you go to the core of it, when you have a young person, a 4 or 5, 6-year-old, and you're installing those values in that young person, I think that that's another reason that makes this game so magic, because you can bring those same correlations and those same rules to how you live your life, to how you play golf. And I think that's another reason why it's the greatest game ever invented.
That's certainly well said, and I couldn't agree with you more. And I think it's a mindset change that has to happen. And I think, again, that instant gratification, I keep going back to it because what you said is so true. I'm reading a book right now that's mentioning that part of the discouragement that they see is because people have in their mind shooting par, and they've always associated in their mind at par being average, the meaning of the word, but yet only, they say, maybe 1-3% of all golfers ever shoot par. So a lot of them get discouraged with the game, and the frustration levels rise. But I think, as you said, it's really finding that improvement within the game, and finding that the enjoyment is that journey and improving. And I like what you said when you first came on, and you're talking about how your school in particular operates in that you work with people's swings rather than trying to adjust them to something they're not, so to speak, because I would imagine that doing so often we see this where, and Mike and I have talked extensively on some other episodes of the show about taking golf lessons and things like that. And we'll see someone try to give someone the perfect swing and the way it should be in the textbook, so to speak. And then there's just even more frustration, and they're out there and they can't adjust to it. And then they end up giving back to their old swing and never really excelling. So do you find that a lot of people that are coming out of your school in that way, they're enjoying the game more because of the style and the manner in which you're teaching them, and that you're kind of working with what they have?
Oh, absolutely. And we actually also teach people very extensively. We work with them on the mental part of the game. So we show them how not only to swing best for themselves physically and mechanically, but we show them how to play their game in their personality. And I don't know if you've ever done a personality profile in your business careers, but it's a very significant element. So many people, I'll give you a sort of another, for instance, you know, Greg Norman was sort of semi-tragic. I'm half Australian, and I came from the same era that I'm just a few years younger than he is. But there's a classic example of somebody that didn't play in their personality. And what I mean by that is he idolized Jack Nicklaus. And Jack Nicklaus has a very different style and personality than Greg Norman. Greg Norman's a very fast-paced style guy, very intense, very rah-rah. He's what we call a driver. So he has to get from point A to point B as fast as possible, and woe betide somebody that gets in his way. And that's how he should play the game. Jack Nicklaus was meticulous. And if you ever watched him, and Jack Nicklaus has been responsible for a lot of things, you know, God love him. But one of the things I'm afraid he's responsible for is slow play, because he would take 45 seconds to hit a golf shot. But that's his style, and it worked for him. And that's how he actually should have played the game, because he needs to go through this whole process, and he needs to be very meticulous. Well, Norman idolized Nicklaus. So you had a very fast-paced style person trying to emulate a much slower styled person. And if you ever watched Norman when he had one of his meltdowns, like most famously in the 96 Masters when he lost that 7-shot lead to Faldo in the last day, all of a sudden he slowed down so much he was like taking 50 seconds to hit a golf shot. He should be hitting a golf shot in 10 or 12 seconds. That's his style. So all of his career, he played outside of his style. And I would tell you, in large part, you couldn't call his career a failure. I mean, the guy won 80-something tournaments and 2 major championships. But this is also the man that led all 4 majors after the 3rd round in 1986 and only won 1 of them. And, you know, notoriously lost leads. So he never played the expression within himself. He never played in his style. He never played in his persona. And that's what somebody can learn. So if you're a fast-paced person, that's how you should play the game. If you're slower paced, then you should play the game that way. But doesn't mean you have to be a slow player.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because we spend so much time covering the mental game. And this is something that we've had sports psychologists and others on the show, and I've asked them this because I like to hear different people's take on it. It's something that's kind of always baffled me, so I'd like to get your take on it. And that's that, especially at the higher handicap levels of guys who are, you know, just trying to get a little bit better at the game, and they're just, you know, starting out in that way, we see them spend so much time, money, and effort on improving or trying to improve their swing through lessons, spending so much money on equipment and different types of training aids and things that you couldn't imagine coming out of the woodwork. And what's amazing to me is that almost every one of them will agree that the game, as they say, is 90% mental. Yet so few will spend time really honing their mental game, their mental skills, as the stuff that you're mentioning. Is that something you see people coming into your school? And if so, why do you think that is?
Well, I think that I think that you've got to understand your own golf swing. I think that that's a core fundamental part of learning to play the game. And we're all built a little bit differently. Every great player throughout history has had certain idiosyncrasies that are a little different from the next player. But what they've done is that they've built a repetitive model that they can trust, that they can learn that's going to work for them. If they miss it a certain way, they're going to miss it a certain way. The other thing is that they do is they don't dwell on a missed shot. I mean, everybody's going to hit bad shots. That's one of the nuances of this game. You've got to step up to every golf shot that you ever hit, expecting to hit the best one you've ever hit, and then fail at that 99% of the time, and then forgive yourself for it and go ahead and take the same way the next time around. I mean, that's part of learning to play the game. But my old coach, Alec Mercer, who was at Royal Sydney, and Sydney was one of the great teachers in history, and I love this old story. He didn't usually say very much to me, but when he said something, it was important. And one time, the equipment I played was professional golf forging, PGF golf equipment in Australia. And I was at their factory. And this is, of course, a long time ago. This is a lot different than it is today, where they have all these monitors and computers and stuff to test you. But they had like these racks of 7-irons. So you would go and try a bunch of 7-irons. And you'd be like, oh, I like that one or whatever. And I'm being a bit of a pain in the rear one day. And I'm sort of testing one 7-iron after another. And I'm being very finicky about it. And Alec looked around at me and he just said, you know what, son? If you're any good, you could hit a walking stick. and so, you know, it's learning to play the game. It's accepting what you are and what you aren't. And it's maximizing the things that you can do. That's really the art of the game. But we're all a little bit different.
That's excellent advice. So going forward then, as we talked about the popularity of the sport, and you mentioned in your article that there, you don't think there'll be anytime soon another person who has all aspects like Tiger did, where he's captivating the sport. But you had mentioned that almost in a way you see it in different players where they have a mix of it. As you said, like Dustin Johnson, you know, being able to be so good with the media, and Rory and the way his game is. What is it that you think then going forward is going to be the outlook for the game over the next 10 years? Do you think someone will emerge? Do you think popularity will come back based on, you know, by the masses of the whole field and interest being in the field of who's playing? Or how do you think will progress from here?
I think it might surprise everybody. I think it might be a girl. I think it might be a lady. For me, the most exciting professional golf right now has been played on the LPGA Tour. Mm-hmm. A young American, Lexi Thompson, won her first major championship at 19, 3 weeks ago at the Nabisco. Lydia Ko, who is phenomenal. Now, this young lady, if you haven't heard of her, if your listeners haven't heard of her yet very much, you're going to. She's 17 years old. She turned 17 last weekend. She went head-to-head with Stacey Lewis, who is America's best player, and won at Lake Merced in San Francisco. She won by a stroke. And it was like they were paired together every day, and it was really nasty weather. So very – this was – understand this. This girl turned 17 last weekend. This was her seventh win.
Wow.
This was the seventh time that she's won – on a professional tour. It's her third LPGA win. She won two Canadian Opens back to back, and she's bespectacled and sort of unassuming, and she's got a head on her like amazing. She's like this 40-year-old guru, and she's 17. And she's from, originally she's Korean by birth, South Korean by birth, but she's a New Zealand citizen. This young lady is amazing. And then in between those two wins, you had Michelle Wee. And Michelle Wee is like this grizzled veteran at 24. And she was, you know, the can't miss kid 10 years ago. And she's been in this huge spotlight for all these years. But all these three girls are so compelling. So I think the LPGA Tour has so much to offer. And it doesn't matter where it comes from. We could have a president that was a fun golfer to watch. Wherever that person comes from, that's what the game needs. But I would really look to the LPGA Tour. I think, and their commissioner, Mike Wan, has done such an amazing job in the last 3 years of turning it around. They've added significantly in tournaments. They were getting one tournament dropping off after the other. They've become a global tour, which is the PGA Tour is now starting to copy. They play official events all over the world, so that's increasing the visibility of golf. I think the next country you're going to see just explode is China. China is going to become enormous. So golf, I think when we look at popularity, if we look at it selfishly and we say it's just in the United States, okay, we could say, well, maybe we've had a drop off of players, but globally, the game is increasing enormously. Mm-hmm. I mean, 30 years ago, there were no golf courses in China. And last year, a 14-year-old Chinese boy played in the Masters.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Amazing how fast that can change. Yeah.
And he made the cut. So, yeah, it's becoming a global game. And that, as a game, you know, we can sort of suck our thumbs and say, oh, geez, you know, there's not as many people playing here. But if you love the game, it's for the game. Right. It's not just because less Americans are playing it. But if there's more people playing it around the world, you know, they're going to have the first golf in the Olympics for 90-something years, I think, and in Brazil in 2 years. Mm-hmm. That's going to be amazing. They're building a golf course just to host the event.
Yeah, and so a good degree of this, it sounds like, is that both the media and ourselves as fans needs to start widening our view a little bit, you know, and stop focusing on every move that Tiger makes and kind of see that there is a lot of great things going on out there. There's a lot of great stories to follow. There's a lot of great things, as you're mentioning, and new developments and new areas the game is being grown. And then just kind of bringing that to the forefront. And that's the area where I think things like the new outlets of social media and being able to share things and, you know, watching an event on YouTube or something like that, whereas you didn't before, you had to rely on whatever coverage was provided to you. Now we're getting a little bit newer outlets for it. But it's just that, broadening our view and seeing that there are other things out there and other stories to follow other than talking about Tiger. I mean, as you mentioned, the Masters before, he wasn't even there, and I think he was still the most talked about player.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not, you know, it's very important that you bring that up, Frank, because we are not a Tiger-only sport. Right. I mean, yes, our generation has been extraordinarily lucky to see someone of his talent play. What he did, you know, when you talk about golf swings and the nuances of, for my money, when he was working with Butch, that was as good a golf swing as you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's phenomenal. The fact that he's reinvented it three times in a professional career, to me, is extraordinary. It's something I would advise somebody never to do.
Right.
You know, you look at a guy like Jim Furyk, when you're talking about mechanics, you would never teach a young person to swing the golf club like Jim Furyk. Mm-hmm. But a few years ago, they did this survey on the PGA Tour, and they took the top 50 players in the world, and they all hit 57 irons. Do you know who hit it in the center of the golf club most accurately?
Who's that?
Jim Furyk. Yeah. And that's not a swing you would teach anybody, especially right. someone you loved. But what's also amazing about him, and it's a testament to him and what we've perhaps touched on and talked about, is his father is a golf professional. So he grew up having the ability to be taught by someone, one of the best teachers in the game, somebody that did this for a living. But I don't know this for a fact, but, you know, in the olden days, in Furyk's, when he was growing up, what they would do is they would cut down golf clubs for kids. So in other words, they would take a men's or a ladies' golf club and they would cut the shaft almost in half and then put a new grip on it. But then you create something that's very head heavy. So the head of the golf club becomes really heavy. And when you're little and learning to swing that, that's like swinging a jackhammer. I mean, it's really, really heavy. So I think that the wrist position that you see of his at the top and the way that he gets the golf club back there mm-hmm. is because that's how he learned to play with a cutoff golf club. Now, today, we've learned so much about technology and kids, especially as we make these, you know, light-headed clubs for kids to learn to play with so that they can learn a more correct swing. But I'm pretty sure that's why Jim Furyk swings a golf club like he does. And much does, and much to his father's credit, you know, he never changed that. He learned to play with it. Now, when Jim Furyk first came out on tour in the early 90s, all the golf pros, all the touring pros would look at him on the range and be like, are you kidding me? Really?
Right.
No way. And to his, great respect, he never changed it. He said, this is how I come. And this is how I'm playing. And he never changed. And that's such a great, you know, not that people can't make changes, but just to understand your golf swing, to understand what works for you and to repeat it and to do it the same way every time. And he's a great example of that.
Right. And that's what we see now. And more on tour, we're seeing almost as many different types of swings as we see personalities. But it's amazing. And it really, as I said, it speaks to what you said before. That's the way to do it. Just really understand your own swing, understand, you know, what is good about it. You can enjoy the game more and you can adapt more. But anyway, Jay, we're running out of time, but I want to thank you again. I could talk to you about this stuff, you know, all evening, because it's just so compelling to me. And that's really what I love so much about the sport. And I'm sure you feel the same way. And I think ultimately, as that type of word gets out, I think we'll see a lot more growth. I think something like what we're talking about here is going to do a lot more for the game than a 15-inch cup ever will.
Well, I just to leave you with a quick short story, I'd sort of brag a little bit about one of our students, if I could, because this, for me, is the magic of the game. But we've had the great good fortune to work with a gentleman from Tennessee by the name of David Newman for a number of years. And Mr. Newman is 71 years young. And last Wednesday, he accomplished something he's been trying to do for the last 10 years. He shot his age.
Wow.
And the sheer joy that gives him is what this game is all about. So whether you're 5 years old or 110 years old or anything in between, that's what it's all about. And he worked passionately to do that. And for us to be a small part of that, that was very, very
amazing.
Special.
And there's something you'll never get from some of the other popular sports, you know, football, baseball, whatever it may be. Golf is a game you play for life.
You do. And that's one of the joys of it. A few years ago, you both may have seen this on YouTube. You can Google this. This lady who was 100 years old and had played the game since she was 12 had her first hole in one. And for some reason, it was on an executive course. It was like a short par three. It's like a 98-yard hole, I think, or something. But some reason, somebody was filming it. And this lady had her first hole in one. And to enjoy this game and to play this game for a lifetime, yes, that's what it's all about. And you can both play it with each other as great friends or with the other friends that you have. As we talked about earlier, you can play it on your own. But that's just one of the special things about the game. You can always do something you least expect, and you can always do something magical.
You can't beat that. Well, Jay, appreciate it. We want to tell you, thank you for coming on the show. Again, great, great information here. I'm sure our listeners will love this. And it really, just talking to you really invigorates you and wants us to, you know, get back out there and play. So we really appreciate having you on the show.
Well, it's my great pleasure, and I appreciate the chance to spend some time with you, Frank, and Mike so much. So thank you for giving us that opportunity.
All right. Well, thank you again.
Thanks.
Take care. All right. So, again, we want to thank Jay for coming on the show. I'm going to include, as I mentioned earlier, I'm going to include all the links on how you can get in touch with him, different social media outlets, his website. Jay's a really great, very approachable guy. So there's a lot of ways that you can get in contact with him. And there's so many other things. As I said, it was a long interview, but we could have really just kept going, and so many things we could have covered. So if you have extra questions, definitely you know, send those over to Jay and contact him through his website and through his social media channels. Again, you can get to all of that by going to golficity.com/episode31. And I will include a link to the article that we were referencing there. Before we close out, I also want to mention that we still have our giveaway running right now. Golf 18 Network is been courteous enough that they're working with us to give away a free foursome. And what better way to really get out there and play again this spring than with a free round. Very, very easy to get involved in that. I'll include the link in the show notes as well. But if you go to golficity.com, you'll see that we're running that giveaway. All you got to do is register for our free email newsletter and you'll be automatically entered to win that. We're going to do that drawing on May 16th. And if you, you know, just in general, if you're not already on our newsletter, I encourage you get on it. Every week we send out all the latest stuff, all the latest articles from Golficity. You get great instruction, you know, all free instruction, links to the podcast, any new contests that come up. We're always trying to give away a little extra products and things like that to the fans. So this is a great way to get involved in all that. And also, as I mentioned in the previous episode, we're going to be doing some of these episodes live when we don't have guests on the show, when it's just Mike and I. We want to hear some of the opinions of the people who are out there listening. And the best way to get to that is just go to golficity.com/live. That's where you'll be able to interact with us and you'll be able to see the next live show. So again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Remember, if you like what you hear, please do us a favor, jump onto iTunes and leave us a review. Those reviews really help. They help us to grow the podcast. And as we talked about, working on growing the game, and this the way to do it is just by this word of mouth. So if you like what you hear, definitely leave us a review. We'd love to see those. And Mike and I read a lot of those on the air. Mike, do you have anything else before we close out?
No, I'm just excited for a weekend full of golf. Going to work on some things, test out some new equipment, and hopefully bring some new reviews to the website of some of these this cool gear that we keep getting. So, you know, with that said, Frank, I'm ready to play some golf.
Yeah, you got those I need the ball balls that you're going to be testing out there, right?
Yeah, we got a couple of golf balls. Some other cool gear is going to come on the site soon. So this week we're going to try those golf balls and do a full review and bring them on to the main site sometime next week.
And you got that great Hopkins wedge that we had a recent review on. That was actually just went out in the newsletter.
That thing is great. I mean, that's really, I mean, it's been a change in my game, that club. So you know, I'm excited about all this stuff that we're getting.
Yeah, it's amazing sometimes. You get the right equipment in your hands and that quick improvement that you can see from it. So that's great. So again, all these things you'll see on Golficity. I'll have all the links in the show notes. Remember, it's episode 31. And we'll be back again next week with some more great instruction for you. We'll see you then.